This episode of the Inner-Ho Uprising is available for your viewing pleasures on YouTube. If looking at people while they podcast is your thing, then you can click the YouTube link in the show notes and gaze along as we talk our shit. This episode of the Inner-Ho Uprising is sponsored by you. That's right, you. All of your Patreon donations, PayPal donations, five-star reviews on Apple as well as Stitcher, shoutouts on social media, article write-ups, mentions to your friends, IHU merchandise purchases, all make this show possible week in and week out. Thank you so, so much, homies. Welcome to the Inner-Ho Uprising, the podcast about sex, love, and dating from the perspective of me, Sam, one black, non-monogamous, pansexual, feminist ho who lives in New York City, whose pronouns are she and her, who is still socially distancing, and who is still down with the resistance.
And me, Rob, one pansexual, agender, feminist with a fatty, pronouns they, them, and daddy.
Me, Rodeca, a fat black, non-monogamous, transhumanist, existentialist femme trying to figure out her place on this big-ass rock.
And Akua, who's soon to be the birthday brat, pronouns she and her.
Hey. Oh God, it's about that time, huh?
Yep. About that
cancer
time.
Season. Woo! It's cancer season. Every episode of the Inner-Ho Uprising works like this. Myself and my lovely rotating co-hosts talk about sex, love, and dating as it pertains to current events in the world, our lives, and yours. And occasionally we hit you with interviews with insightful folks, or like today, do deep dive episodes into a topic of our choice. On today's episode, it is summer body season. But what does that really mean? We're talking all about insecurity and touching on topics like body dysmorphia along the way. Plus, the racial origins of fat phobia, why clothing is political, an update on Crystal Kaiser, and the never-ending struggle to chill the fuck out. Also, after this episode, we'll be taking a break for the month of July. Motherfuckers do need rest and relaxation. If you're a new listener, now is a wonderful time to go back and listen to the body of work we have amassed over the past, was it 5 years now? Yeah, yep. It is.
Wow.
On all things sex, sexuality, gender, race, feminism, mental health, ability, non-monogamy, parenting, body image, and so the fuck much more. You can also take this time to listen to one of our sibling podcasts. A few months ago, myself and the folks over at In Those Genes podcast did an incredible season on genetics, black identity, data privacy, genealogy, and much more. You can listen to our fellow bad bitch brigaders at Queer Walk Pod, Bag Ladies, Marsha's Plate, and Tea with Queen and Jay. If you're in your spiritual bag, you can listen to our homegirl Juju at It's a Little Juju podcast, and much more. I'll put a link to all of my fave pods in the show notes. Patrons, I'll still be getting together with you all bi-weekly through the month of July, and we'll be on our patron-only Slack chat, of course. And non-patrons will still be on social media, so be sure to follow us. Also, be sure to subscribe to us wherever you listen. So whether that be SoundCloud, Apple, Spotify, YouTube, whatever, you'll get a notification when we return. So make sure to subscribe. What are our hashtags?
If you would like to follow along with the conversation had in this podcast on social media, you can do so by using the hashtag Inner-Ho Uprising so we can see it, and the hashtag Pod In so other people can see it.
And if you would like to follow us on social media, you can do so at Inner-Ho Uprising without the G on Twitter, at Inner-Ho Uprising on Instagram and Facebook. You can join our Facebook group by searching Inner-Ho Uprising Community, that is CUMMUNITY. You can head over to InnerHoUprising.com to sign up for weekly goodies via our newsletter, Pay a Ho, or to check out the rest of our merch.
And if you want to pay us to speak virtually at your school or conference about sex positivity, black feminism, podcasting, or other kinds of topics we discuss on this here show, or if you would like us to host a consent, pleasure, or dating workshop for your organization, we would love to. So to book us, you can send us a line to ihupodcast@gmail.com. That email is in the show notes in case you forget. Now we're getting into a segment that we call Ho of the Week. Ho of the Week is where we shout out the homies who have supported IHU in the past week. Hoes of the Week gets special nicknames, and the game, if they choose to participate, is to guess the meaning behind their nicknames. This week, we got Whitney, a.k.a. Houston, who became a patron on Patreon. We got Nina L., a.k.a. Nina Sky, or maybe Move Your Body Girl, who became a patron on Patreon.
I like that.
Move your body, girl.
That was a good time. We got Christy L., a.k.a. Progressive Sandwich, who became a patron on Patreon. We got Molly S., a.k.a. The Librarian, who became a patron on Patreon. And we got Sophia, who is Sophie, because I didn't want to say Sophie's Choice, because I'm pretty sure that that's a film about the Holocaust, who became a patron on Patreon. So, Sophie. That's where I'll stop, Sophie. And then we have our Apple Podcast reviewers for this week. This week we only had one, so if you haven't reviewed us yet on Apple, be sure to do so. Also, do that on Stitcher, too. We got AEDVM, who writes, wow. That's a lot of wows. As many wows as five stars, right? Wows for five stars. I love this pod. I'm not usually one for conversational shows, but this one is my hands-down favorite pod right now. The hosts are so genuine, knowledgeable, and funny. If you're not listening, you're missing out. Wow. Look at your genuine, knowledgeable, and funny faces over there.
Wow.
Wow.
I don't think I can ever say wow just one more time anymore. I have to string it out now.
And nobody's going to get it.
None.
Because it's not fucking with the vision.
Well, if you are fucking with the vision and you'd like to be a hoe of the week and get a cool nickname, here are some things that you can do. You can leave us a 5-star or a wow star review on Apple Podcasts. You can feature us in an article you've written or shout us out on social media. These are some non-monetary ways that you can support us. We love monetary and non-monetary support, and we understand that in these uncertain times, monetary support is not feasible for so many folks, so please do not spend your last dollars on us or feel pressured to do so. Put you and yours first. But if you can spare some change, you can donate to us at PayPal or on PayPal at paypal.me/innerho. You can become a patron on Patreon by going to patreon.com/innerhouprising, or you can purchase some merchandise at innerhouprising.com/merchandise, the links to all of which are in the show notes. Also, a reminder that if you do become a patron on Patreon, for $2 a month, you can participate in things like our Slack chat and our patron-only film nights, and for $5 a month, you can join our Monday night Zoom hangouts. And at any Patreon tier, you receive access to our episodes a few days early and entry to our workshops and parties. And now we're going to get into Bay of the Week. I know everybody knows this person who's Bay of the Week, or at least Rod does.
Yes.
So our Bay of the Week is Jerry Jones. I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about Jerry Jones.
So Jerry Jones, I saw about her when they posted, I think it's Calvin Klein, right? And they got a huge poster. And I was like, first of all, who is this baddie? And then I heard their story and I was just like, this is amazing. Like, representation in its highest form. It's like seeing me, basically. And just, it was, she's dope. But obviously you have like more information.
For shizzle. So the more information is that Jerry Jones is an actress, a model, a creative, an activist, and a fat, black, transgender, queer woman. She's been featured in Nylon, The New York Times, Essence, Teen Vogue, Paper, and regular Vogue. She's hitting both Vogues. Wow. She's the first openly black trans woman to produce a film competing at the Cannes Film Festival for the film Port Authority. And most recently, as Rodecca said, she's fronting Calvin Klein's 2020 Pride campaign, hashtag Proud in My Calvins, which features a cast of 9 LGBTQ models. So according to a little CNN write-up that was done on Jari, this marks the largest casting for a Calvin Klein Pride campaign ever, which also includes a partnership with Outright Action International and its COVID-19 LGBTIQ plus Global Emergency Fund, which I think is super dope. And as a part of the campaign, there was this huge billboard of Jari in Soho, and she posted about it on Juneteenth saying, today on hashtag Juneteenth 2020, a fat black trans woman looks over New York. And that was like a really fucking iconic dope thing to see.
I love it. That's it.
That's what I'm going. I stand.
Yeah, for sure. There was a picture of her in front of her billboard, which is like such a cool moment. And she was like popping champagne and just like had the most
and
ecstatic,
smiling like so
yeah,
big.
The most ecstatic fucking smile I've ever seen in my entire life. And I was like, oh, that is real Black joy right there. That's the kind of content I'm trying to see right now. And then I go back to my bed. I'm like, I hate life.
Just curl up in a ball.
Leave me alone. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, she's super dope. She's super gorgeous. And I want to take time to read, since it is summer body season. It's all bullshit anyway. It's season. It's SZN.
That's it.
But yeah, I wanted to read a quote from her that I thought was relevant right now and always. So this quote is from an interview she did for Elizabeth Susan blog as a part of their Clothing is Political series. So she said, as a Black woman, as a trans woman, as a queer woman, as a fat woman, my entire being is going to be some kind of political movement because I go against everything that society says is great. I've had the privilege to be successful with those intersections. My trans body in lingerie and underwear, my fat body in fitted clothing and swimsuits, my Black body in high-end brands and expensive jewelry. Clothing becomes political when it's put on my body, especially when it's quality, when it's trend, when it's custom. It's a deafening and proud silence that needs no audible words. It distinctively adds as a visual scream to the mainstream that says, how dare I?
What a fucking quote. What a fucking quote.
It's like, not only are you, like, perfect, but you're perfect.
Yeah. What the hell?
The fuck?
Yeah.
I didn't need that.
Full package.
My God.
Full package, yeah. So everybody take that and carry that with you. Before we get into our topic of the day, I did want to spend what would normally be our current events segment doing a quick update on a topic that we discussed a few episodes ago, actually at the start of the season. So on season 6, episode 2, Don't Sleep on Paula Dix, we spoke about Crystal Kizer. Akua did a really good deep dive into Crystal Kizer's case. So I definitely recommend folks go back and listen to that episode. But if you are unaware, Crystal Kizer is a Black 19-year-old survivor of sexual violence currently facing criminal prosecution for actions taken in self-defense against her abuser and trafficker. For almost 2 years, Crystal has been incarcerated at the Kenosha County Jail while awaiting trial and presumed innocent. In February 2020, Crystal's $1 million bond was reduced to $400,000, still an unimaginable sum. On June 22nd, 2020, the Free Crystal Kizer Defense Committee, Chicago Community Bond Fund, Milwaukee Freedom Fund, and Survived and Punished paid Crystal's $400,000 bond so that she can continue fighting her case from outside of a cage and with the support of her community, which is super important. When Crystal's case ends, the bond money will be used to establish a national bail fund for criminalized survivors of domestic and sexual violence under the direction of Survived and Punished, which I've spoken about in previous episodes, and housed at the National Bail Fund Network. So if you're unfamiliar with Crystal's story, I will be linking to that aforementioned episode in the show notes. And if you would like to support Crystal right now, you can donate to her Healing Fund. It is a Crystal Kizer Defense Committee fundraiser in coordination with Crystal and her attorneys. Money collected there is used to support Crystal to go towards her cost of living, transportation to and from court, expert witnesses for defense, which actually costs like a lot of money. I didn't know that. One expert witness could cost as much as $50,000 and also can be essential in preventing Crystal's wrongful conviction. So some money has already been raised, but these efforts will be combined. The link to the fund will be in the show notes. You can also call or email Milwaukee DA Michael Gravely and tell him to drop the charges against Crystal Kizer. His number and email address will be in the show notes. And lastly, you can send cards and letters of support to Crystal to Black and Pink Milwaukee, which is an organization who will deliver those funds directly to her, and their P.O. box will be in the show notes. Now we're going to get into a topic that we like to call Fuck That, or is it called Fuck It? That is actually what it's called. It's our topic of the day, and today Rodeca is taking us on a journey.
I'm taking y'all on a journey, okay? So today's Fuck It is kind of like in the form of a long-ass self-care tip of the week. We do that every week, but you know, this is kind of going into something that we all go through at least once in our lives, maybe more, in insecurity. So the reason why I wanted to talk about this is because COVID has exacerbated my overthinking. So I spend a lot of time indoors sitting around thinking about things and reflecting, which I feel like in a lot of the ways it can be positive. But in this instance, it kind of made me think about how much I have this negative self-reflection, or how much I'm constantly not beating myself up, but more like editing myself because I feel like I'm not good enough. And I think I really didn't think that I had insecurities because I'd already kind of been like, oh, well, I'm fine with my body. I'm fat. So that's cool. Like I've accepted that. But I didn't think about how like deeply it can be my doubting my own abilities, or me just thinking that I'm not smart enough, because I used to be this kid that I got everything right from the first try. And everyone was just like, you're so naturally smart. But when you get older, sometimes you just don't get shit immediately. Sometimes you got to do the research. Sometimes you got to just go like, okay, I don't know this. Let me learn. And to me, it was just like not being the person who I thought I was gonna be, and not being the person who can get things as soon as I pick something up, felt like I was failing. So whenever stuff like that happens to me, I go, well, am I alone in this? Or is this something that can be named? Is this something that can be worked through? And that's kind of just what sparked me thinking, I can't be alone. And if other people are also feeling the same thing, then, you know, maybe we should talk about it. So we're talking about it, guys.
Let's chat.
Let's chat, guys. So depression, body dysmorphia, anxiety, imposter syndrome, narcissism, the list goes on. But they usually come with an overwhelming and debilitating side effect, which is insecurity. So believe it or not, everyone experiences insecurity. And I say I believe it or not, because when you're stuck in a spiral of thought, you may have convinced yourself otherwise, and that you're the only person in the world who is insecure or has those moments. While it's often associated with looks, by definition, insecurity is the feeling when you are uncertain about your ability to do something or measure up to a certain standard. Insecurity is a fear-based emotion rooted in low self-esteem or poor self-concept or image. Because most of life achievements are linked with the recognition of others or rejection of others, insecurities can occur often. It becomes a cycle of unrest, overthinking, and can become extremely debilitating. Because it usually comes with other mental health issues, it can leave a person feeling isolated. So there's a lot of conditions that are linked with insecurity and low self-esteem, but first we're going to talk about imposter syndrome. It's also known as imposter phenomenon, imposterism, fraud syndrome, or the imposter experience. It's a psychological pattern in which one doubts one's accomplishments and has a persistent internalized fear of being exposed as a fraud. Even when faced with evidence of their competence, those experiencing this remain convinced that they are frauds and do not deserve all that they have achieved. Individuals with imposterism may attribute their success to luck or interpret it as a result of deceiving others into thinking they are more intelligent than they perceive themselves to be. Even though early research has focused on the prevalence among high-achieving women, imposter syndrome has been recognized to affect genders equally. About 70% of people experience some sort of imposterism, but for some, the condition is chronic. So, an expert on the subject, Dr. Valerie Young, has categorized imposterism into subgroup in her book, The Thoughts of Successful Women, Why Capable People Suffer from Imposter Syndrome and How to Thrive in Spite of It. So, Dr. Young builds on decades of research that have already happened and kind of categorizes it into five different groups. So, there's the perfectionist. Primary focus is how something is done. This includes how the work is conducted and how it turns out. One minor flaw in an otherwise stellar performance, or 99 out of 100, equals failure, and thus shame. Then there's the expert. Their primary concern is on what or how much you know or can do. Because you expect to know everything, even a minor lack of knowledge denotes failure or shame. The soloist, their primary concern is who completes the task. To make it on the achievement list, it has to be you and you alone, because you need to do and figure out everything on your own. Needing help is a sign of failure that evokes shame. And then there's the natural genius. Their primary concern is how and when accomplishments happen. But what makes them different is competence is measured in terms of ease and speed. The fact that you have to struggle to master a subject, or that you're not able to bang out your masterpiece on the first try, equals failure, which also evokes shame.
And then there's the superwoman, superman, or super student, or super anyone, super person. Competence is based on how many roles they can juggle and excel in. Falling short in any role as a parent, partner, on the home front, hostess, friend, volunteer, just falling short in any role that they do evokes shame because they feel like they should handle it all perfectly and easily. So not saying that you, if you feel this once or twice, that you're suddenly like a bad person. Everybody has those moments where they feel these things, but it's kind of saying if this is happening constantly, if everything that you do, you feel one of these things, then that might be experiencing imposter syndrome. I actually read a great article on why imposter syndrome is significantly worse for Black women, and it was written by Lincoln Hill. That'll be linked in the show notes. And it basically shows that all the studies or recent studies have proven that there's a racialized component to imposter syndrome, noting that experience with racial discrimination, combating negative racial stereotypes about intellectual inferiority and underrepresentation may cause high-achieving Black people to feel like imposters despite impressive resumes. But the studies are usually focused on race or gender, and Black women have the unique disposition of sitting at the crux section of both, and therefore, the studies fail to consider that for Black women, racism is gendered and sexism is racialized. So we just get the double whammy of fuck, you know?
Yay.
So then there's stereotype threat. Stereotype threat is where people feel themselves at risk to be conforming to stereotypes about group that they identify as belonging to. The term was originally coined by Claude Steele and Joshua Aronson in their 1995 article, Stereotype Threat and the Intellectual Test Performance of African Americans. It was published in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology. As of 2011, because that's the most recent, statistic of how many they have, more than 300 published papers show the effects of stereotype threat on performance in a variety of domains. It is considered by researchers to be a contributing factor to the long-standing racial and gender achievement gaps, such as underperformance of Black students relative to white ones in various academic subjects and underrepresentation of women at higher echelons in the field of mathematics and science. Situational factors that increase stereotype threat can include the difficulty of the task, the belief that the task measures their abilities, and the relevance of the stereotype to the task. Basically, the more internalized the stereotype, the more the affirmation mattered to them. The stereotype threat has been documented to occur in both the intelligence tests administered to African Americans and tests administered to women. For example, the act of reminding a woman student of the stereotype that women perform worse at math than men may actually cause her to perform worse on a math test than she would have if she had not been reminded. On the flip side, reminding an Asian student of the stereotype that they are supposed to be good at math would actually cause them to perform better if they hadn't been reminded in the first place. The stereotype threat is also well documented among people with both visible and invisible disabilities. Sherry Byrne Herber wrote in an article for Medium about her personal experience with stereotype threat and her disabilities. She said that thinking about the times that she heard that people with disabilities always needed accommodation, work less, or looked for special treatment caused her to work twice as hard, avoid travel with her coworkers, and not ask for reasonable accommodation until a year after she started working. She wrote about basically every day struggling to reach a coffee can at the top of a cabinet and just saying nothing because she didn't want to be the person to say something, but it's a coffee can and it should probably be lower if they're not able to reach it. Repeated experience of the stereotype threat can lead to a vicious circle of diminished confidence, poor performance, and a loss of interest in the relevant area of achievement. The opposite of stereotype is stereotype boost, which we talked about as if an Asian person heard a positive stereotype, then they're more likely to perform better, and because of exposure to positive stereotypes in their social group. A variant of stereotype boost is stereotype lift, which is people achieving better performance because of exposure to negative stereotypes about other social groups.
Mad infuriating.
And it's something that you internalize over and over again because you have other people saying it to you, the media is representing that, and you're just like, okay, and you think you've conquered it, but it's really something that goes on behind the scenes, and it's a constant vicious cycle.
Representation matters.
Absolutely. So that leads to, that's kind of just, I kind of separated that because that's ways that mentally insecurity or like internalizing negative self-concept can hold you back. But there's also body dysmorphia and gender dysphoria, which is like the physical representation and how that can affect you. So gender dysphoria is a condition where in which there's a conflict between a person's physical gender and the gender they identify with. The mismatch between someone's sex and gender identity can lead to a distressing and uncomfortable feelings called dysphoria. Gender identity and self-image are inextricably linked. Why would I even put that word there? Why? Knowing me. Anyway,
gender... Hey, man, don't doubt yourself. Like, this is the whole point of the thing.
Yeah. A woman looking in the mirror and seeing a physical outward appearance that doesn't match can understandably be disorienting and distressing. The dysphoria compounded with societal stigma of transgender people can also lead to other mental health disorders, such as anxiety, depression, and OCD. Body dysmorphic disorder, or BDD, is a mental disorder categorized by obsessive thoughts that an aspect of your body or appearance is severely flawed and needs exceptional measures to hide or fix it, leading to compulsive behaviors. In BDD with delusional traits, the flaw is imagined. If the flaw is real, it is severely exaggerated. When I was looking at research, I actually had somebody who said, can fat people have BDD? Because there's like this weird perception that not weird, but there's a perception that body dysmorphic disorder is only for things that are imagined, as opposed to like if a fat person knows that they are fat and society doesn't exactly like fat people, that they can't suddenly be insecure or have BDD because it's not imagined, it's an actual fact. That's weird. I don't know why so many people have access, but that's just not the case. So I just wanted to like clarify that, because when I was reading, I was just like, oh, so is it only things that you've imagined that makes you have this disorder? But it's not. It's whatever something that you feel is wrong and you are obsessively trying to hide it or nobody can convince you otherwise, that is BDD.
I feel like by asking that, that is a mad fat phobic question in the first place. Like, it's inherently saying like your body is wrong as a fat person, so you're not imagining the wrongness because you are wrong.
Yeah, because exactly. You like, are wrong. Like, that is the fact.
And it's really like surprising how many like, you know, those ask question things and people was like, is that even something? It's surprising how many people, actually it's not surprising, but it is very, it's a common question. So people with BDD think about their real or perceived physical flaws for hours each day. BDD affects about 1 in 50 people, so 2% of the population. That's a lot of fucking people. They can't control their negative thoughts and don't believe people who tell them that they look fine. Their thoughts may cause severe emotional distress and interfere with their daily functioning. They may miss work or school, avoid social situations, and isolate themselves, even from family and friends, because they fear they will notice their flaws. BDD most often develops in adolescents and teens, and research shows that it affects men and women almost equally. In the United States, BDD occurs in about 2.5% of males and in 2.2% of females. That is the research that's on a binary, so that's what they have. BDD often occurs or begins in adolescents 12 to 13 years of age, according to the American Psychiatric Association.
I want to jump in and say that the prevalence of BDD might actually be higher, really honing on what Sam has said. Like, it won't be flagged or seen by clinicians as a problem because of their biases, you know, that they also believe that this wrongness that you're perceiving of yourself is in fact true. Like, no, it's not imagined, or are your attempts excessive to hide it because it is wrong? You need to fix it. They won't see it for what it is because of their biases and their internalized phobias.
And to add on to that, that's actually something that happens for people who are bigger or in those situations, but it also happens in terms of race. There was a study that when clinicians were presented with identical case studies in white, black, and Hispanic women, clinicians were asked to identify if a woman's eating behavior was problematic. So 44% identified a white woman's behavior as problematic, 41% identified the Hispanic woman's behavior as problematic, but only 17% identified the black woman's behavior as problematic, despite the exact same, their identical case studies, except for their race. So they aren't even diagnosing people who are working up the courage to come for help if they're black, because they just don't believe them, and even though they have the same exact behavior as someone else. And it's already hard for people to come forward. In my research, it was pretty obvious that people are saying that they don't want to come forward with this disease because it's so internalized that they think that it's something that's normal. And then when they do, they're not even being diagnosed with it when they go to the doctor. Just to double back, the causes of BDD are unclear, but certain biological and environmental factors may contribute to its development, including genetic predisposition, neurobiological factors such as malfunctioning of serotonin in the brain, personality traits, and life experience such as child maltreatment, sexual trauma, or peer abuse. A person can suffer from both BDD and gender dysphoria. They are in no way mutually exclusive. While the reported percentage of white people and people of color with eating disorders sit at similar numbers, people of color are significantly less likely to get help for the same issues as we talked about before. And compared to other populations, gay men are disproportionately found to have body image disturbances and eating disorder behavior. Gay men are thought to represent 5% of the total male population, but among men who have eating disorders, 42% identify as gay.
Is there any like reasoning or any hypothesis as to why that is?
Because it's about social acceptance. So it's really like in the media, and body image is just like present in terms of a straight masculine man, and that's the ideal man. So not seeing that representation is going to affect people, and that's why it affects it disproportionately. Obviously, there's ongoing research, but that's just like one of the reasons.
Cool. Gotcha.
So at face value, it just sucks that people have to worry about their bodies being normal or socially accepted. It's your body and it's the only one that you get. And you should have a good time and celebrate your body and your brain and what it's capable of doing despite whatever it is, because that's your body. Our inner voices are directly affected by the way that we see ourselves, and all our subsequent actions are filtered through this voice. If this voice isn't speaking positively or if it's beating you down, your quality of life is going to be diminished. As a society, we're also losing students, particularly Black people and women overall in academia, who would otherwise be high-performing students, to things like imposter syndrome and stereotype threat. So knowing this, just want to talk about things that you could do to help your inner voice, or things that you could do to just kind of help you improve your self-concept. If you listen to this and some of this applies, that's perfectly okay. Maybe all of it applies, but the good thing, there are steps that can be taken so you don't have to suffer. First, if you feel like you have BDD, you should be consulting a therapist, or you can reach out to the Office of Women's Health at 1-800-994-9662. That'll also be in the show notes.
Also, maybe this is more of an Akua question, or you too, Rod, but just, or maybe this is something I put in the show notes later, but like, just because we say therapists or mental health professionals or any medical professionals can have biases, how do you find an aware therapist who's not going to like fat shame you or be transphobic?
I'm definitely one for screening therapists. When you're looking for a therapist, you can shop therapists just as you would like window shop clothes. You do not have, if you pick one, you don't have to stick with them, and that is all wrapped up in our access, you know, depending on your health insurance, depending on things like that. But definitely screen your therapist when you have an initial phone call with them. Ask them straight up, what are your thoughts about, you know, fat people? What are your thoughts about trans people? Let them know, this is what I am. This is what my identities are about. How do you feel about that? Don't wait for it to come out in the wash, because that causes more trauma and for you in therapy than coming straight forward in that initial conversation and asking them, and then with what they say, move forward. And if they're like, you know, if they're transphobic, or if even if their responses seem a little iffy, and you of course will know, you know, if it seems a little iffy or if it seems a little PC, you'd be like, all right, thank you for your time, but I need a therapist who's gonna be like, no, I ride for straight fat up people, I ride for trans people, ain't none of that shit happening in my office today. And if you see it happen, check me on it, boo. Because you know, even as I do this podcast with you guys and I bring my ideologies and my stance into my work, I still have my biases. And my clients know that if I say something that hits them the wrong way, is transphobic, homophobic, and I didn't realize, they can call my ass the fuck out. And I'm like, yo, I am so sorry. You know, I got to go work on that. And they need not to feel afraid to do so, because I will always apologize. And that's the kind of therapist you're looking for.
Thank you.
I also want to add that there's a fine line, and this might be my bias talking, but there's a fine line between those that have poor self-image when it comes to our body, especially being fat people, and BDD. And that line comes in how we go about fixing that flaw and the extreme measures, you know, that we go to fixing that flaw. So like, I have an issue with my FUPA, with my fat upper abdomen area. That's not the pelvic area. That's the acronym. But I don't go to the extreme. Yeah, I suck it in all the time. And that's something I learned how to do. But I don't go to the extreme in which it's uncomfortable. If like I'm full and I can't suck it in, y'all gonna see it, you know. But there are people who will like bind themselves in ways or wear 5 layers of Spanx or, you know, really fixate on it, get cosmetic surgery and still are kind of unhappy with it. It's these repeated attempts to remove the flaw. And also it's the disturbance of it. So like not going out, like I could wear a crop top and a high-waisted pair of jeans or shorts and my FUPA is noticeable, but I'll go out and eventually be like, fuck it, this is me. You know, someone with BDD will stay home. They will cancel plans. They are not going out. They are not going to work. They are late for work because they're changing their clothes 5, 6, 7 times until they're comfortable. You know, it's this disruption of your life because you're fixated on this flaw.
Yeah. Thank you for the clarification, because I don't want people who it may not be to that extreme to feel like they have BDD when it could be something that, you know, they could work on internally on their own. In the same vein, we're going to talk about some general tips if you feel like you're experiencing low self-esteem. You can appreciate all the things that your body can do, whatever that looks like. I know we spend a lot of time focusing on the things that we aren't able to do. And especially if you struggle with a chronic illness, this can be especially difficult because you think about the loss and the things that you can't do on a day-to-day basis. So the things that you can do and focus more positively on that, that can make a world of a difference. Remember that every body is valid. I think we hear this so much nowadays that it almost doesn't sink in. Like you're just like, okay, I get it. Like my body is valid, but it is like, it's true. Your body has every right to be here thriving on earth as the next person. Be selective with the media you consume. Blocking or unfollowing triggering sites or people is perfectly fine and beneficial to your self-perception. On the opposite side, following people who look like you, share your values, or identify as the same gender or sexuality as you can build a positive sense of self and minimizes the feelings of I'm in this alone. Find your community or attend virtual group meetings. Talking to people who are in similar situations as you, sharing the highs and lows with others will do wonders to your self-esteem. And obviously also not feeling alone is a part of it as well. One that I saw a couple of times that I didn't expect, and it's my favorite one, is to hang out with older people. So it's like, generally older people don't give a fuck, and statistically we care less about what other people think as we get older. Studies show that individuals over the age of 50 across the board tend to have a higher self-esteem because they just don't give a fuck about people. And like absorbing that energy and being around someone who can give you advice and let you know like, look, this is your life, do what you want to do, because they've been through it through experience, can definitely, like, that advice can make a world of a difference. Start training yourself to veer away from external validation. So recognize that you may be addicted to, or just you need the validation that comes from excelling in certain roles, or just someone to constantly compliment you in order for you to feel valid. No one should have more power to make you feel good about yourself than you. Wow. Affirmations.
Snaps. Sheesh.
Know your worth, king. That's it. Affirmations. Repeat. We love affirmations here. Repeat mantras about your worth, about your intelligence, about what it is you want to achieve, what it is that you think you lack. Fuck that. Repeat it whenever it's necessary, whenever you feel like you need that boost and you just need to like make sure that you know who the fuck you are. It helps. Saying it out loud, screaming it if you have to, it helps. And lastly, give yourself a break. You're trying the best you can with what you have at your disposal. Everybody's trying the best that they can. The perfect person doesn't exist. No one is perfect. And aiming for perfection places an enormous amount of pressure on you that will exhaust you to no end. You are great. You are doing the best you fucking can, and keep going because the world needs you. That's it.
Damn, so I have a small tidbit about the imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
Because I've heard it. I've seen it on Twitter. I know we spoke about it on the show, but I've never like really understood it because I've never experienced it. So I had like this like educational understanding of it, but not like an empathetic, real empathetic understanding of it until I joined the fire department. So I'm in the fire academy with nobody who fucking looks like me. And also the other four black women that were there, that we all felt the same collective. We don't belong here. Even though we're doing what these motherfuckers are doing, and we passing all the tests, and there's literally nothing that they did that we didn't do. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. We did everything that they did. But we still felt like they were gonna look at us as less than, therefore we did not belong. And it kind of invalidated all of the hard work that we put into, like, oh my God, there was so much fucking work. And invalidated all of it. And I'm just like, yo, one day they're just going to be like, nah, fuck this. Get the fuck out. Which, of course, is not the case. But it's just like a kind of irrational thought, because you are taught as a sign of female at birth and black that is something that you can't do. And also not seeing people that look like you. So I really am strong about representation matters, because not seeing people that look like you, then it's like, okay, well, if I don't see anybody that looks like me, obviously I can't fucking do it. I got to be the first. Be first everything. Niggas are tired of being the first, but that is an irrational thought. So I did do the mantras. I had affirmations on my wall about why I make a great firefighter. I read that shit every time I started to doubt myself. And eventually I graduated, and I was like, it feels like I was a baby stuck in the birth canal. And then I finally got right out the coochie.
And another really important thing that you did was realizing that, in a rational way, you took the same steps as everybody else. So you deserve to be here. Sometimes you're there and you're just like, I guess I got lucky. But when you go back and go, no, I took this test. I did this. I worked and I trained for it. And that all those steps, and going back and realizing that these were earned and not given to you in any way. That's also just another thing where I can make this rational. Even though I'm here and it feels weird, I can make this rational, because the same test that you just said that you took, I passed it too. So, and precisely. It's that simple.
But you can hear the talk to yourself, because you can hear yourself say, well, you know, the only reason why I even passed is because I got this credit and this credit. So if I didn't get that credit, then I wouldn't be here. And it's like, who cares? You still passed the fucking test. Or the only reason why I passed this is because this and this and this and this. And it's like, but you passed. As long, even if somebody gave it to you, fuck it. Who cares? Like, we're not going to talk about that, because, bitch, you made it. But nobody gave me anything. Nobody handed anything to me. Nobody made anything easier. In fact, they might have made shit harder. And just being you, being 5'3", makes it extremely fucking hard. It's like, there's no way to justify me being there except that I deserve to be there. And that's, like, the thought that you really got to keep in your head. Like, no matter what, you deserve to be there.
There's something also to the fact that, and you were kind of getting at this, where you were like, even if somebody did give that one thing to me, sometimes you're in, and I'm speaking from like a media professional space, so like you put the firefighter professional fucking perspective on it, I'm putting the media professional perspective on it, but like sometimes you do have all the qualifications and you're doubting yourself, but sometimes you actually don't have all of the qualifications. And that's okay, because all those motherfuckers, those white man motherfuckers there, don't have the qualifications either, and are also learning on the job. And you, as a person who has been employed by this space, who has who's bringing your like personal perspective to the table and your skills to the table, also deserve to be nurtured in the same way that fucking white niggas are coddled.
The cousin or the niece of the company who's there because they just graduated and they need the job.
It just be the nigga who I fucking met here, like at X, Y, and Z fucking white space in Brooklyn. Like, we just know each other. It don't even be like we're related, son. It's just
not
like
even nepotism.
It's just like white like we're just both white dudes who have the same sense of humor, so we all work here.
I want to go back to the use of the word irrational, because I feel like sometimes that's really steeped in white supremacy. You know, these thoughts of imposter syndrome, especially for black and brown folks, you know, for marginalized folks, don't come out of thin air. You know, and we've hinted at this, you know, it comes from white supremacy. It comes from patriarchy. It comes from homophobia. It comes from sexism. It comes from misogynoir. You know, it's not just these thoughts that we've just woke up one day and they came in our head. We are constantly receiving these messages against us that we also internalize, and it fuels the fact that we feel like we don't belong, because most of these spaces, if not the whole fucking world, is white owned. You know, it's, you know, so in some way you never feel like you fit in that space. You never feel like you've earned these things. You always feel like an imposter, because you're not fitting who it was really made for, or who it coddles, or who it nurtures.
The system wasn't designed to lift us up in any way. we're fighting against
and
that's it.
And it's like, it's okay to accept that you may not belong. Like, there's nothing wrong with accepting the fact that, okay, I'm in this white ass space. Either I leave this white space or I accept that they're never going to accept me as one of their own because I don't look like them, because racism, because misogyny, but I want to be there. Mm-hmm. So that makes it okay because I want to be there. I don't got to be their brother or their sister or whatever. I want to be this person. I want to be a firefighter. So I don't give a fuck. I'm going to be the best firefighter and I'm going to go home to my actual family, which is just me because I live by myself. But
you have two dogs.
It's okay. They're not here. I go home to me and then I can see my family as well. And I have people, I have a community that does love me who I don't have to fucking beg for their love.
That's it.
Well, thank you very much, Rod. And thank you. What were we called earlier? Knowledgeable, funny, and genuine. The knowledgeable, funny, and genuine input from Rob and Akua. I hope that helps everybody at home who's dealing with these things that we do not deal with in silo, as Rebecca said. What did Drake say? One of us go in and we all go through it.
Yes.
One of us go in and we all go through it.
What he said.
I don't know what the in was. Maybe he said M and he was saying imposter syndrome. Look at Drake. Yes, I know Drake is trash. You don't need to email us about how Drake is trash.
I definitely thought he was talking about jail, but okay.
Okay.
Oh, he's talking about jail. Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
I didn't think about jail at all.
Defund the police. Anyway, I think that's
defund let's do that. Police. Let's talk let's about go. That.
Let's talk about this.
He's right, yeah. It damages the community. Anyway. That's a party on the weekend. That's a party on the weekend. She loves a party on the weekend. She loves a party on the weekend. We are going to get into our next segment. It is called Fuck Me. It is about our sexual, romantic, and dating lives, and sometimes just our lives. And Akua has a Fuck Me that is very connected to our Fuck It. So Akua, let us know about what's going on.
Yeah, so I decided to hop on that wave that Rodeca was on and talk a bit about an insecurity that has been plaguing me through the quarantine. A little bit before the quarantine, but has really been exasperated since shelter in place has started. So I've always had a history of like low self-esteem, low self-concept, and like body image issues. And I talked a bit about that, kind of having the acceptable fat body. And so since shelter in place for the past 3 months, So I've always had this history with my weight and with my body, literally since I was like 10, but it really like steamrolled at like 13. And I have like this history of like yo-yo dieting and disordered eating. I've been on every single diet that has ever come out. There were times where I was just going days just drinking water, nothing but water. I've been taking laxatives and like teas, and I've done it all. Keto, Atkins, no carb, no meat, all of it. And there was a point in 2015 where I actually was able to get my weight and my body to a place that I had designated as a goal. And for the past 4 years, 3.5-ish years, I was able to maintain it. But even when I got to that goal, like Rebecca said, you know, I thought I would get there. I thought I would, you know, finally be good with my body. And no, there was just still all of this negative self-talk, all of this negative self-concept, still kind of not being happy. Especially like I mentioned with my FUPA, because even as I got in that small, I still had a little, you know, tummy to love, you know. And it, you know, it really pointed out to me that, you know, just because I feel like I'm in a better place did not mean that that was the fix. That was not the cure. You know, that was not what was going to make me love everything about myself. It was layered, it was complex, and it was all there. So that was the 3.5 years. In the past year and a half, my weight has really skyrocketed because of stress and abuse. And now in shelter in place, I have really, my weight has really gone up as well. And I still battle with that insecurity. I still battle with my self-image. What I've been trying to do to work with that is really, well, once I noticed that back in let's say 2016, that I was still unhappy no matter what my body looked like, I really started to make it a point to dismantle my fat phobia. I realized that there was, I made a point to work on my self-concept and my self-talk. But as the years have gone by, you know, and kind of having this fear of gaining the weight back and all those things, I've made it a point to dismantle my fat phobia because that's where it lies, you know. And a lot of the things that I was doing was stemming out of my fat phobic thoughts, my fat phobic beliefs. So if I ever wanted to feel comfortable in my body at no matter what size, I was going to have to work on that first. And, you know, by changing, again, the way that I speak to myself and the way that I think about myself. Affirmations are great. I'm not really good at affirmations because sometimes it feels like that fake it till you make it kind of thing. And that's a phenomenon people have, especially when I'm in, you know, in therapy and, you know, teaching this to clients. It feels fake. And, you know, some people can't stick with it. I'm one of those people that can't stick with it. But one thing that I've done is learning to compliment the parts of my body that I don't like. So sitting in front of the mirror, looking at that body part, looking at that part of my body, touching it, feeling it, and saying good things about it. And that has really helped me to love my fupa, to be more specific, but to really get more comfortable with my body no matter what size I am. So currently I am thinking about weight loss, but now not in this fat phobic sense, but because my health also just feels horrible, you know. I've gained weight and my breathing is a bit labored. I feel sluggish. I just don't feel well, you know, health-wise, not really about my size, but health-wise, I know I just don't feel well. And that in working and doing that and shifting that, I've learned to, you know, really center my weight loss goals on how I feel, how my body is doing. I know if I go to the doctor, she'd be like, bitch, your cholesterol's off the roof. Like, I already know it. Because I can feel it. I feel the difference in the way that I'm eating. I'm more anxious, and that's tied to my high blood pressure. I just don't feel well as a person. But outside of that, like I had to like really sit and see, you know, if that was really still connected to fat phobia. But outside of that, I am loving the size that I am. My hips are rounder. I'm like, yes, booty. But I feel I don't feel good. You know, if I felt good, if I felt energetic, if I felt, hell, if I, you know, could stand for more than 5 minutes and not feel tired and not feel pain in my hip or in my knee, and I was still this size, it'd be a go. I'd be just fine. So I do want to work on moving more and increasing my flexibility and feeling better health-wise. And whatever comes with that, comes with that. If that's weight loss, cool. And if it isn't, whatever. But I want to feel better as opposed to how I look. And I agree with that tip you gave, Rodeca, about seeing what your body can do. I feel like a lot of times we are avoiding the way that we look and we cannot see ourselves. And a good way to do that is to videotape yourself and see yourself in motion, or, you know, just walk around naked if you can, depending on where you live and who you live with. Being more nude and looking at myself more in the nude, not with clothes that can conceal something or hide something or flatter something, has really helped in the way that I view my body. So yeah, that is my fuck me.
First of all, thank you for sharing. But I wanted to add, because you said something that really resonated with me. I think for me, with body acceptance, that's been something that I've struggled with my whole life. But when you said something along the lines of like shifting your focus away from your weight and more so your health, I think it's so terrible how society associates, like, if you are big, you are unhealthy, right?
That's just a thing. There are some big people who I was about to say some big, big there are some big people, you know, some bigger sized people who, and I follow them on Instagram, are like yogis and are like flexible, yeah, and are like
power lifters.
Yeah. I can't do any of that, you know, and that's not tied to my size. That's tied to my inactivity. You know, that's tied to me not moving, moving my body into its limits, into its potentials. But yeah, the size of your body is definitely not tied to your health. And that is a part of dismantling that fat phobia, knowing that that link does not exist. It's not real.
And that was something that I learned, because would like step on the scale, but then I'd make like these changes that I felt were better for me. Like getting up, like when I have depressive bouts and I'm not in bed, but then I get up and I go outside, you know, all that type of stuff. And I'm like, wow, I'm feeling better. For some reason, I get on a scale and I'm expecting it to move and the scale looks exactly the same. It's just like, you can feel better and it does not have to do with your weight whatsoever. Those are two completely separate entities. And the pursuit of just feeling better doesn't have to be like, all right, well, that means I'm going to lose weight. Like, if we just take that out of the equation, it's just doing things for your mental health and to make you feel better. It could, like, not seeing the scale move won't make a difference on how you feel.
Right there really changed my dieting and my exercising, because at a point I started to focus on what else was happening. Do I fit better in my clothes? Do I feel better? Am I going to sleep easier? All of these things, because I would get obsessive with the fact that the scale was not moving, you know, like I have been in the gym for 2 hours for every day and I'm eating this amount of calories and I should be losing weight, but I'm still stuck at this weight. What's happening? And that drives you bananas. That drives you absolutely bananas.
That's a key component in like the body positive movement though. Like they have things called NSVs, which are non-scale victories, because you have to focus on not looking at this number and what are things that make you feel better that have nothing to do with your weight. And it does make a difference. It's something that everybody should focus on if they can. And then another thing that you said about videos and watching yourself move, I'm always naked. So that's like something that I've just always been naked my entire life. I'm home. I'm naked, so that's fine. But I was making videos because I also find affirmations weird because I feel like I'm lying to myself. But I'll have videos where I'm talking to myself like my friend. So I'm like, girl, look at you. Like, I will have those like moments. And for me, that's when I feel like I'm being genuine, because I'm talking to myself as I would talk to anybody. You know what I mean? And that makes a difference. If that's something that you need to do, it's not really faking it. I'll be like, look, you didn't have a good day today, but tomorrow's gonna be better. Like, stuff like that. And just being honest with yourself and realizing that, like, everything's not gonna be 100% and peachy all the time, but having those moments and going, all right, well, why did you feel this way? Or, you know, breaking it down, it can make a difference. It doesn't have to be this cookie cutter way of doing things, but finding a core value, like talking to yourself better and making it work for you, is kind of just what it's supposed to be. It can look like anything, because only you know you, basically. But yeah, that's it.
Thank you both for sharing. I do want to reiterate, and this is exactly what you've just said, but I think it even still came out in your language earlier before you said the opposite of what you had said, Akua, but you said like you're tying your weight loss goals to feeling better, but you're still tying weight loss goals to feeling better. Instead of like, my goal is to feel better. You get what I'm saying?
What I'm trying to say is that my goals are to feel better in health. They have nothing to...
Yeah, I that is what you're saying. And I get that you're trying to say that. I'm just saying it's funny how it still comes out even though you're saying the complete opposite. Like, it's interesting how ingrained our fat phobia is within us.
And I think I can't get it because I didn't hear it. So I have to like listen to this when it comes out to like hear that. But thank you for pointing that out, because now I have to go back and hear it, because it's probably I skipped over it because it's so ingrained that I'm not even realizing it.
Yeah. And then I don't think this is the purpose of what anybody was trying to do. It seems like you were all trying to say like, you're just getting on the fact that weight and health aren't intrinsically tied. But I do want to like just unpack it a little bit further, maybe for people who are listening at home, and say like, there's no extra veneration of fat folks because they can do things. Like, just because you're a power lifter or because you're a yogi or because you can stretch, like, you can be a fat person who doesn't do shit and you're still worthy of love and acceptance and feeling good about your fucking self.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So I think now is a good time to go into Ask Media and tell everybody about the book that I read or that I listened to this past week. So Ask Media is a new segment. It's a play on the term mass media, and it's where I talk about books, TVs, podcasts that I've watched, and I do a review on it related to sex, love, dating, and or gender. They're spoiler-free reviews. Because of time constraints in this episode, and because I literally just finished it a couple of hours ago, this is going to be a quick highlight. So it's more of like I think this is a good time, since it is summer body season and we are talking about these concepts on this show, for everybody to just like maybe put this on their summer reading list or something like that. So the synopsis. So the book is called Fearing the Black Body, The Racial Origins of Fat Phobia, and it's by Sabrina Strings. And I'll read the synopsis. There's an obesity epidemic in this country, and poor Black women are particularly stigmatized as quote unquote disease and a burden on the public healthcare system. This is only the most recent incarnation of a fear of fat Black women, which Sabrina String shows took root more than 200 years ago. String weaves together an eye-opening historic narrative ranging from the Renaissance to the current movement, analyzing important works of art, newspaper and magazine articles, and scientific literature and medical journals where fat bodies were once praised, showing that fat phobia, as it relates to Black women, did not originate with the medical findings, but with the Enlightenment era belief that fatness was evidence of quote unquote savagery and racial inferiority. The author argues that the contemporary ideal of slenderness at its very core is racialized and racist. Indeed, it was not until the early 20th century, when racialized attitudes against fatness were already entrenched in the culture, that the medical establishment began its crusade against obesity. An important and original work, Fearing the Black Body, argues convincingly that fat phobia isn't about health at all, but rather a means of using body to validate race, class, and gender prejudice. So I'm only going to say a couple of things about it, but I do recommend that everybody read it. It lays out how, quote unquote, standard ideas about race, body size, and gender were defined, and they were only defined by faux intellectual white men for like fucking 200, 300 years. And it was just like them citing each other. Like it was literally a fucking circle jerk for centuries. It does this in three parts. So it talks about the Renaissance shift from robust to thin ideals. America and the rise of the transatlantic slave trade, and also the rise of Protestant values. So things like, oh, gluttony is one of the seven deadly sins. Black people are gluttonous. This justifies our enslavement of them. And the medical industry retrofitting ideas around size to fit already existing body ideals. So after all of the damage was done, doctors trying to like go back and be like, oh, this is why fatness is wrong. Some things that I learned that stuck out to me, although I learned a lot in this book, was that the man who introduced the concept of BMI, his name was Ansel Keys, did a study on, this is like in the 60s, he did a study on obesity and heart disease and found that the risk between mortality and weight was U-shaped. So it was not only the very overweight who were at risk for mortality, but also the very underweight who were at risk for mortality, but no, there's no like skinny phobia, you know? And then he declared in a Time magazine article that obesity does not necessarily cause heart disease, but it's ugly and should be exercised off. And this is like the father of the BMI. So I think that's extremely problematic. Right. There were also, this is something I learned, early papers around typical weight and heights, the standard, were set forth by the insurance industry and were based on white male bodies. So I knew that like standards for weight were based on white male bodies, but I didn't know that it was like the insurance industry that set it forth. And it's like something rooted in capitalism and such a fucking scam like insurance is cannot be valid, in my opinion, and is worth unpacking. So there's that. And then there's also eating and fatness were associated with being Black, being of poor mental faculties, and being ungodly for centuries. Who should read this, in my opinion? Everyone, because it's clear that everyone has internalized fat phobia. I would say if history is your thing, this is an interesting read. If eugenics and the invention of race is interesting to you, this is a good read. If you're a pro body positive person who misses the role that race and gender play in fat phobia, this is a good read for you. And if you're a pro Black person who is, or anybody who's doing work to better learn about race and to just be a better person when it comes to the movement for Black lives, but you're also fat phobic, you need to unlearn fat phobia. So I think this book is a really good place to start. Also, all medical professionals should read this because it gets at the biases that they have and says like your biases are bullshit, basically. So yeah, definitely recommend that book.
You don't realize how internalized things are and that it's just like so designed to be that way. And I definitely need to read that.
I mean, that's the point. That's the point of stereotypes, so that you inhale them, you ingest them, and you truly believe them. And then you lose your, like, you really do so much to try to get away from them, like, that it becomes unhealthy all in itself. Like, one thing I was always thinking about, like, in the beginning when Rebecca and Nicole were talking was, of all of these dysmorphias and dysphorias, one thing that it's never studied is across cultures. Mm-hmm. because like those studies literally don't exist. They just don't exist. From the research that I did, my idea was that these things don't exist in other cultures that were not like cultures that were not affected by colonization. Typically, that's not completely true, because just because you're not affected by colonization does not mean you're not affected by white supremacy. But in certain cultures, like, gender dysphoria isn't a thing because you're allowed to be who you were, who you are. That's also like what it was back in the day when you're talking about ancient African countries and ancient America. Not ancient, it's not even that fucking long ago, but you know what I mean. Back in the day before pre-colonization. But you know, you were allowed to be who you wanted to be. There wasn't a binary. These binaries didn't exist. So there was no fat, skinny. There was no man, woman. So ergo, like, even if there was some kind of dysphoria associated with how you felt, or dysmorphia associated with how you felt, it's not to the level that it is now as far as people killing themselves because of it. So, yo, we need to do more research, bro. I've got this fucking degree in research and I never used it, but maybe one day. But while I'm here, this is Rob and the struggle to chill the fuck out. And it's funny because in our group chat, Sam asked if like we wanted to talk about our insecurities and our fuck me's. And I was like, nah, I'm smooth. But then I actually realized that in me talking about my struggle to chill the fuck out, that the reason why I don't chill the fuck out is because of a very large insecurity. So inadvertently, I'm talking about insecurities. Like, okay, I'm not immune, I'm not exempt, but like my insecurity is like I have a fear of rejection, like a very deep, strong fear of rejection. And that is, it goes with my friends, it goes with my family, and it goes with people that I engage with, like sexually, intimately, romantically, whatever. I always have a very strong fear of rejection, to the point where if I feel like I'm being rejected, I just won't talk to you anymore, because I don't want to set myself up for failure. I don't want to set myself up for heartbreak. So it's a lot easier for me to just walk away and give you your time to figure out whether or not you want to fuck with me or whether or not you want to be my friend, than for me to keep trying persistently, because then I feel fucking annoying. And I feel like if you didn't hate me before, you're going to hate me now. So it's very complex. And I don't think that right now in my life that that's something that I feel like truly unpacking, because I have so much other shit to work on, but it's something I'm accepting. And my struggle to chill the fuck out is just truly not assuming the outcome of situations. So not building up a conversation that I haven't even had in my head and giving myself the worst possible outcome and then acting on that outcome. Because it's like, it's just no point. One day, me and Sam were talking about the guy that I am dating. I spoke about him on the last show, on my last episode, about his booty hole. And even though it's a conversation that me and him had, and I think I might have even mentioned that I mentioned him on the show, but I was like, not in the way that you think. But he, on his own time, on his own terms, decided to listen to the show. And I was like, fuck. I was like, all right, let me give you a heads up. You're going to get to a part where I'm talking about a conversation that we had when you didn't clean your booty. Well, not that you didn't. Oh, let me back up. A conversation that, I'm about to fuck this shit, whole shit up. A conversation that we had about me telling you to clean your booty hole and me thinking that you took it offensively. And he's like, okay, like, I don't know why you told me that. But I was really afraid that he was going to be like, yo, what the fuck? Like, why are you putting all my business out there, or blah, blah, blah. Even though, of course, you know, I don't mention him by name. Nobody knows who the fuck this guy is. You don't know what he looks like. You don't know him from a fucking another regular man in the street. But I was so convinced that he was actually going to be so mad at me. And I'm like, did I just fuck up a good thing by literally talking about a fucking text message to get a point across? And Sam was like, chill the fuck out. Because I was literally doing what I said I wasn't going to do. It was like, it's so ingrained in me to just look for the most negative outcome, even if it's not the most realistic outcome, and just act on it. I'm like getting prepared, like, all right, let me just get prepared for this nigga to get past the segment and see what finagling I have to do to to get this nigga back in my life, but it's not necessary. It's not necessary, and it's not worth the brain power that it takes to think about negativity. I'm truly just working on letting people really be themselves and allowing myself to be myself, my authentic self. And it's either you love it or you don't, not trying to read too hard into the things people do and say, because it's not like what people do isn't a personal attack. Some people just aren't really meant to be in your life. They may fade out of your life, but it's not like they personally are like, yo, fuck Rob. And even if they are, it's none of your business. You know, like how people choose to respond to you, you have nothing to do with it. It's how you choose to respond to that.
Yeah.
It's like, what can you do? If somebody doesn't like you, if somebody decides that they don't want to fuck with you, and instead of like telling you, they ghost you or whatever, it might hurt, but how you respond to that is like the true point. And if you think of it as, let me think of all the worst possible outcomes of the situation, of me hitting this nigga up and he goes, I fucking hate you, da da da. Or you could just decide to let things be how they are. And if they come back, they do. If they don't, they don't. And look at it also as, is it my loss? If something were to happen, if the guy like were to be like, yo, you was talking about my fucking asshole, and then like never spoke to me again, is that my loss? Because then clearly he wouldn't be the kind of person that I should be dealing with if he took something so small, so personally. Then that's like, it's better that way, because it only gets worse from here. I only get more honest, but it's like, that's not my loss then. That is my gain, because now I'm free to continue to find other people. Thankfully, he just laughed and he thought it was fucking hilarious, and it worked out fine. But I had to spend like, even if it was like 2 minutes of me building it up in my head, that was two of the longest minutes ever. So really consciously, like knowing like, yes, cool, I have like this fear of rejection, and that's okay, because I was rejected so much in my life up until fucking recently. It's not like it's something that like, Akua said, it doesn't come out of nowhere. Like, it happens because things happen, because people say things to you and do things to you. So you develop these thoughts and these ideas about yourself. But I can accept that. And I don't have to live by it just because I have it. Like, it doesn't define me. My fear of rejection doesn't define me. So it's not even a struggle. It's just something that you have to actively do. You have to actively remember to calm down. Actively know your own worth. That you are worth being your authentic self, and that there are people who love your authentic self, and there are people who will not love your authentic self, and that's okay. As long as you're not doing anything to hurt other people and you are just being yourself, then there's nothing more you can do. And people will love you. If my parents still love me after all these fucking years, there's people that gonna love me. Love me for who I am. So that's my... Fuck me.
I just want to add that it's funny that me and you are going through similar things in terms of just like overthinking and thinking that another person is going to say this because you did this and that and forth. But that, like you said, I'm glad you said it. It comes from rejection in the past. It comes from things that have happened, and you're learning and you're trying to adapt. And you're like, okay, let me prepare for this, because last time it caught me off guard. But another thing that's also helped me is like realizing that, especially when a new person comes into your life, this person's not the other person. This is a brand new experience, and just kind of like going, okay, I don't know this yet. This is a new situation. Going into things without expectation and allowing them to just be themselves, and you kind of going with this clean slate, it makes a difference. And also I've learned that this is something that I'm struggling with. Everybody can't be everything, and everyone's allowed to like have their own opinion about something, because he could be mad about that. But then you can say, like, look, I didn't realize it was going to offend you. And then you can move on and be like, all right, well, I'm not going to do it again, because that's not who you are, and that's not something you enjoy. But just kind of going, like, you don't know what's going to happen. Let me just walk into this, and it is what it is, as opposed to going those two long minutes where you're like, it's going to be the worst thing ever. It's just kind of learning to be in the moment and letting things happen as they come, as opposed to just thinking the worst and preparing for every counter argument that can come. I'm definitely doing the same thing, so I understand.
It's a struggle, but nothing is impossible. Like, if you change the way you think, you can change your whole fucking life. And that's literally a thing that you think. you know, you it's neurons and fucking connections. And you
manifest. Always,
bitch, bye. Sam out here with the Kota Kente glove.
You dropped your Kente you dropped sash. It. Yo. As well as your kufi.
If the fucking Kente cloth fits, I'll wear it. But but for real, if you just change, you it's granted, it's not like changing the way you think. Oh, it's like night and day. That can take years. It can take decades, depending on how what pace you're moving at and how much work you're putting into it. But that's all it is. It's the way you think. It's the way you think and the way that you perceive others are perceiving you, which is still a thought. You change that, you change everything. You could change your whole life.
That's facts.
Niggas just want to be fucking happy. Like
facts.
Niggas do just want to be fucking
happy.
And I am.
Happy. Facts.
Yay.
I am happy.
That's good to hear. Thank you for sharing, Rob. Thank you, everybody, for sharing in this Fuck Me segment. We are going to skip Fuck You. But over the break, send us your hotels. We want to hear about how you quarantined for 14 days to get some, how you fucked with masks on, how you hosted your 14th virtual play party, all the shits we want to hear about it. So send your stories, inquiries, thoughts to ihupodcast@gmail.com. Please include your pronouns. And because we're in the future, you can leave us a voicemail and we'll play it and respond to it on the show. So you can drop us a line at 404-491-9158. Again, that is 404-491-9158. That number will be in the show notes for this episode. Quick one-liners. What is everybody doing for July?
Working.
Okay.
Maybe taking some more walks or something, or doing something, but I've got no plans.
A long walk around at the time. Right, thank you. Sam was just staring blankly.
I was waiting for you to finish.
Although I look like Jill Scott, I don't listen to Jill Scott, so I'm not able to contribute to this. At least
you
I knew it was Jill Scott.
Yeah, that's what
there
to
you
say.
Go.
Wow. Well, thank you for knowing.
Yeah.
Queen.
Yeah, I am going to still be socially distancing and working, and it sucks. And I want to be in 2022 when all of this is over. Hopefully.
Yeah, 2024, baby.
To be honest,
well, like, I just need to go.
I will be turning a gracious 28 years old. Yay. But because this year was a nothing year, we're calling it 27 part
that's
two,
a,
baby.
That's a
yes.
Fact.
Yes.
We don't age this year.
27 junior.
That's a fact. I will also try to hit the beach and parks like Tuesday at 8 a.m.
Nice.
When no one else is there because I need
some
air.
It's beautiful too.
Yeah.
You'd be fucking all alone, like, I got all this ocean.
I love solitude. If this episode made you laugh, helped you learn something, made you feel good, and made you question yourself in a good way, positively moved you in any sense, or if any of the episodes this season did that, or if any of the episodes since 2015 did that, you can leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, and let everyone that you know that you love these hoes. We appreciate you all. Once again, we will be taking a break for the month of July, but we will be back in your earbuds and eyeballs in August. Be sure to subscribe to us wherever you listen. That's SoundCloud, Apple, Spotify, YouTube, whatever, so you get a notification when we return. What are our social medias?
You can follow me, Rodecca, sometimes Rebecca, at
what
the
about the
timeline.
Show? That's not how we ever do
bad,
it.
My bad.
Nika leads one
there.
Episode and then
it's
they're just like,
there. I'm so used to, sorry.
It is there.
No, it's further it's down, right that's there. Why. If you'd like to follow us on social media, you can do so at Inaho Uprising without the G on Twitter, Inaho Uprising on Instagram and Facebook. You can also join our Facebook group by searching Inaho Uprising, CUMMUNITY. And you can head to...
sing it.
No, Rob.
Thank you.
Head to innerhouseuprising.com to sign up for weekly goodies via our newsletter, Pay a Ho, or to check out our merch. And you can follow me, Rodecca, sometimes Rebecca, at The Darkest Timeline on Instagram and Exist in Crisis on Twitter.
And you can follow me, Rob, at Pubiscus on Instagram. And on Twitter, I can't believe I never remember my fucking.
It's Robbie the body.
Like, Robbie the body.
Yeah,
we thank all God. Know. We're just gonna all here. Start saying it instead of you. Yeah. Actually,
I appreciate that. I just changed it, and my brain is like,
you'll okay. Never remember it ever again. That one that neural connection never formed. Unfortunately,
never fixed.
Yeah.
You guys can follow me, Akua, at Hey Akua Girl on Instagram.
And you can follow me at SlamRid on Instagram and Twitter, and Carmen San Diego for previous travel and food photos. All of the social medias will be in the show notes for this episode. Everybody have a lovely summer.
Bye.